When I'm sitting in your place, I have two initial questions, and I can't see why you haven't got those questions. The first question is, who are you? And the second question is, why should I listen to you? My name is Stephen Adler-Land. I'm the Director of Research for the European Futures Observatory. It's a foresight research institute, and we look into all sorts of things, and they're mainly towards the middle to the second half of this century. We're not really interested in much before 2050. In terms of what we're doing today, Stephen D is the wargaming, and Stephen A is the future, okay? But having said that, there is a bit of a trap in there because Stephen D does actually know something about the future, and Stephen A does know a bit about wargaming. So it's not as clear cut as we might think. So if we go on to the next slide. Okay, where's the lady I spoke to earlier? Okay, if you remember one thing, remember this, okay? This is basically a futures framework. It's a framework by which we analyze the future. The slides will be going on the website afterwards, so there's no need to rush and scribble. There's an awful lot of detail in here, and I'm limiting myself to no more than about 10 or 15 minutes to get through the whole slide deck, okay? Concepts that are really quite important are, if we start at today and move into the future, the potential futures that we see are numerous. There's more than one possible future. And we tend to think of this in terms of a cone. It sort of fans out from the present in a cone of possibilities. Not all of those possibilities are plausible. So, for example, if we're asked to sort of give a consideration about a Martian invasion, we could do that. We would say, yeah, that is a possible future, but we don't consider that very plausible. So, you know, it's not to say that we wouldn't do it, it's to say that we wouldn't be terribly convinced by the results. We have wild card scenarios. They are really important, okay? A wild card scenario in our community is defined as a future which has a very low probability but a very high impact. This is the 9/11 scenario, okay? We then have, on this chart it's called probable futures, but that's usually what we might think of as the official future. The official future which we officially think will happen is the probable future. That might not be the preferable future because we've got to allow for a little bit of the operation of politics in here, where the official future, the probable future, is one that's considered undesirable by some people. And so they have a different preferable future which they're trying to guide us into. The other thing is that this is, I find this a useful tool in thinking about kind of organizational dissonance. So I found myself in this conference talking about defense procurement, okay? And why is there such a mismatch with the ambition in procurement against the actuality of procurement? From a futurist perspective, we would say the sort of threat assessment, the sort of force capability, the force sort of delivery is out here, but the treasury budgetary cycle is back here. There's a mismatch in timing, there's a mismatch in horizons, and that mismatch in horizons sort of means that things don't, you know, not everybody's working to the same agenda. So we then ask the question, well, where have we seen this before? Hopefully some of you guys will actually recognize this. If you don't, if you're in the British Defence and you don't recognize this, for goodness sake, go and read it. And this contains a number of the concepts that we're kind of talking about. You know, we've got a futures cone from the present moving out. And we've got different structures within sort of, you know, UK thinking. I think that this is one of the things where the futurist community can say that on this particular picture, it's absolutely covered in our fingerprints. It's, you know, sort of the type of thing that we're, you know, thinking about. In terms of where we are today, what we thought we would do today is to be right at this end of the cone, possibly something that you don't normally consider in your day jobs, which is the strategic context for defence and security out to 30 years. So today we're going out to 2050, okay? And it's going to be a fairly wide thing. You might, you know, I think at this point you should say, if anyone here thinks, oh gosh, this is not for me, then it's fine to go, because that would just lower the temperature in the room, make a bit of space for us. But if you stay here, it's kind of wild and woolly end of the spectrum that we're dealing with today. So one of the things that futurists do is to say, well, we're going to cast forward 30 years, let's cast back 30 years. Okay, can a lot change in 30 years? And as if by magic, yes, we think it probably can. So if we look at sort of Europe 1990 and Europe 2020, okay, you know, there's an appreciable difference here. The Soviet Union is now Russia. You've got the sort of the, well, it's really the break up of the Soviet Union, the sort of collapse of the Warsaw Pact. This one I found interesting. I found sort of like Czechoslovakia interesting. So, you know, out comes the research. What was the state of, you know, Czechoslovakia in 1990? And it's actually starting the process of the friendly divorce. There was a Czech Republic and there was a Slovak a republic, but within a federal framework. So I found that quite interesting, because I always thought it in terms of monolithic. So it's something useful for going back 30 years just to have a look at that. And of course, in this one, we've got the result of an unfriendly breakup of a country, former Yugoslavia. We've got a realignment of Eastern Europe, which is sort of pro-NATO, pro-EU, now members of NATO in the EU. We've got unresolved issues in the Balkans. And so, you know, there's a big difference in 30 years. Today, what we're inviting you to do is to chart how the map of Europe will look like in 2050. And that's why you've got crayons, and that's why you've got a map. If we could just go back, there's one more thing, one more point that I'd like to make on this one. Every map contains political assumptions. The political assumption built into that map is that Crimea is part of Ukraine. The facts on the ground might be a little bit different. And so today what we want to do is to uncover some of those political assumptions, the hidden assumptions that you bring to your map making. Because what we're doing today is trying to define the European battle space in 2050. So if we can now go on to your task today, because I sit through lots of PowerPoints too and I stop listening after a little while. Okay, today is all about the strategic assumptions. Okay, how's it all going to fit together? And it's at a fairly high political level. So we're not dealing with force structures and things like that. We're sort of, you know, we're thinking about the high political level. We'd like you to chart on your maps the membership of the blue team. You can, you know, assume an unspecified red team adversary from the east of this map. We are not saying which one it is, but you can make assumptions about which ones they are, and at some point in the future we might ask you who you're assuming the red team to be. We'd like you to state the manner in which you think conflict is going to be conducted. And it's quite interesting, I I never really pay attention to stuff that I'm sent, and I hadn't realised that there was going to be a plenary on hybrid warfare just prior to this exercise, okay? Because, for example, if you were to say, okay, conflict's going, you know, forget tanks and, you know, aeroplanes and things like that, it's all going to be, you know, cyber, then on your maps, you would have, you know, basically, a bit like the guy's Lego chart, you'd have routers, servers, databases. Where is the physical infrastructure located? You could say, oh, Stephen, no, it's all going to be economic and financial, okay? It's financial wargaming. So you need to put on your map trade flows, monetary flows, you know, the assets in economic wargaming. Or you could say, no, we're much more interested in the kinetic stuff. We're going to say, you know, which forces are going to be members of armies and navies and things like that. That's okay, but we need you to define what it is that you're charting. You can assume that the technologies currently under development have reached fruition. So you can assume a modest degree of progress in artificial intelligence, unmanned vehicles, really super smart weaponry. All of those things are actually, you know, on your table. The question is, how do you think they will be deployed at a national level? And you can, okay, this is where you can laugh. You can assume a benign funding environment, okay? What we're saying is that austerity's gone, okay? We're, you know, prepared to spend at least 2% of GDP on the defence effort, however the defence effort might be defined, in the era around 2050. In terms of what we would like from you, okay, I'll give you sort of, you know, I will now tell you, being a futurist, I've got a crystal ball and I'll tell you a future, okay? Your future is that we'll do this until lunchtime. I'm probably going to just stay here over lunch. So, you know, if you find the conversation continues over lunch, that's really good. After lunch, somebody from your table, you can either elect one yourself or I will appoint one, will come and explain the strategic assumptions that you've made in your map to the rest of the group. And this is a bit where I was thinking about a smaller number, so we might have to adjust this a bit, because you then have to invite comment from the group on the strategic assumptions that your group have made. From this, what I'm hoping to do is to go back to the printer, get all of these scanned so that we've got an electronic version, and then we're going to write a short paper on, you know, some of the strategic assumptions that have been built in by, we've got a room full of smart people, so we're going to have a little bit sort of crowdsourcing in these strategic assumptions. Is there anything that I forgot, Steve?
Yes, one thing, the single individual who's going to be named and held accountable from each table will write their name and email address on their map, please.
Yes, if you write it on the back of your map, so it's not captured publicly, but on the front of your map, give yourselves a team name and write the team name on it, so that in the public version, we will just refer to you as, you know, Team, I don't know, Tom and Jerry. Tom and Jerry.
There was a question, Matt.
Yes, Anthony.
Yeah, energy.
You've got two sentences of less than 12 words each.
Is things like nuclear fusion and very good solar tech happening in 2050?
By assumption, yes, it is. This is how futurists deal with the kind of framework. We say, by assumption, it is. If it becomes a critical issue, then we do another exercise where it isn't. Okay, but for the purposes of today, yes, it's on the table.
One sentence only, comma, is China a unitary state?
What do you think?
Yes, but I will.
In that case, write your assumption. And when you come and do, you are now the spokesman for that group. and you can come and give us that assumption and the consequences of that assumption in Europe. Do you see how futures things work?
It's you telling us what you think future is going to be, not us telling you.
Fair enough.
And I mean, a really interesting one. I mean, you know, you could be the Asian table. What's the Asian perspective of the European battle space in 2050? Because, you know, we all think of it in European terms. Okay, well, you know, you're now appointed to give us an Asian view, or, sorry, an Australasian, Asian, you know, Pacific Rim view.
Oh, yeah.